What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another Brand Doctor podcast episode. Today, we're going to be talking about how to get in front of the right prospects and really start to dial in your sales conversations. And I have a guest who has been quite the expert in this space for quite some time. He's built a phenomenal community, over 6,000 people in his community, helping them close higher ticket sales. And so without further ado, I want to introduce Alex Shalinsky from Prospects on Demand. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I love the little background noise. That was great. Yeah, it's great to hear, Henry.
So Alex, I don't want to spend too much time on your backstory because people just want the meat and potatoes these days. But if you could give us a quick intro of who you are and fast forward that to where you're at today.
Yeah, me and quick, not usually good friends, but I'll do my best here. Prospecting on Demand is my company. It's a mentorship community for agency owners, coaches, and consultants. Boutique company, purposely focused on like 50-ish, 60-ish people, because we're all about, as you can see, the culture, like really community-built business versus just letting anyone in and trying to scale it. Our kind of mantra is like, we'll help scale your business, not ours, because everyone on my team has a separate company to make sure that we can generate revenue there. My other company is a marketing agency for personal injury attorneys that I started in about like 2014, but I was actually making money from it from about 2010. I just didn't realize that there was a business to be had while I was in college. I thought it was my side hustle. So long story short, essentially realized that I can make money after college, kind of in that very classic postgraduate phase of like, I don't want to go back to school and I don't want to get a job. And oh my God, I'm getting paid $1,000 a month by attorneys right now to post on Constant Contact. Can I make this a business? And from that, started seeing Sam Ovens ads and Ty Lopez ads and Dave Rogenmoser's ads and started realizing there's a business to be had here. And so I started that company actually in 2014 with my wife, had amazing success. Over the next 3 years, thankfully, built a seven-figure agency, was able to really scale it pretty simply. My wife pretty much took most of the account management side and I did most of the sales. And then fairly quickly thereafter in 2016-17, started doing coaching and built out Prospecting on Demand. And now 5 years later, 2022, have a massive community on Facebook and a very private community on Slack for our community of Prospecting on Demand. So been a really fun and enjoyable journey. Lots of crazy things in between there that we can talk about anytime, like fun facts of me having open heart surgery at 29 years old. Not fun, but did happen. And also, you know, working for the Miami Dolphins or the UFC as part of, you know, my growth as a human being. So just some really unique experiences over the last 10, 12 years. But I'm really grateful to be here.
That was great. That was 2 minutes. You and Short get along. So let me tell you, you know, it sounds to me that you're just another overnight success.
Overnight success. Such a classic comment, right? By the way, I think one of the things on podcasts, they position you out to be some like maven. Everything goes well. It's all perfect. Just remember that whatever you see on social media is what that person wants you to see. I'm certainly not perfect by any means. I'm not doing incredible in every facet of my life. There's many things that I want to be better at. Mostly it's way beyond business. I want to be a better dad and a better husband and a better human being. I want to treat myself better. I'm a great giver and I'm great at, you know, making money, but those things are really not important in comparison to these other assets. And I think it's really skewed people's minds, social media, thinking like everything is constantly perfect and comparing yourself against other people to make you feel less than or worthless or not good enough. And I just want to make sure in every podcast I go on, no matter how I'm positioned, no matter what I explain or share on this show or other shows or in my podcasts themselves, I'm not perfect. There's a lot of work that I have to do consistently to get better to achieve my success. And I think this overnight success or constant feeling of not being good enough is a really, it's a cancerous, in my opinion, not just entrepreneurs, to human beings in general. And I think that's something I always want to make sure I bring on every podcast.
Well, you talk about the anti-hustle culture. And, you know, I'm in your group and I'm scrolling around and I see a post. It says Grant Cardone is wrong in all caps. And yeah. I, you know, as I continue to read it, I'm like, you know, for those of you that know me, I'm not a huge Grant Cardone guy. I did get a chance to meet him on Clubhouse and, you know, and actually talk to him and tell him like why I don't like him. it was actually a good conversation, and I could be wrong, but I felt like he took my point of view seriously. He didn't try to usher me off the call. And he actually thanked me for having that kind of feedback. And so, but let's talk about this anti-hustle culture, because I think, man, you bring up a good point. It's cancerous. And I think I think to a literal extent, where if you are constantly trying to hustle your way to the top, it could put you in the hospital.
Oh, and it actually did put me in the hospital. So I'll give a very quick shortened version of this. I actually was able to incredibly speak at Harvard this past week, which was an amazing experience. And it wasn't about business. It was talking about my heart surgery and persevering and how I went from, you know, a college student into my business and in that kind of format. But the quick, like short spark notes of it is when I was 18 years old, I found out that I was born with a congenital heart defect called a bicuspid aortic valve. And long story short, what it meant was that my heart was getting larger and it would have to have surgery. It was imminent, but it was likely I wouldn't be until 50 or 60 years old. And most people don't want to talk about it, right? Like the idea of morbidity or mortality, because we want to have this metaphorical hourglass that we all have unlimited amount of time, even though all of us know, unfortunately, we don't. And so at 18, when you're kind of facing mortality, even though they're telling you that it won't be until you're 50, in my mind, I had created a cap that maybe I won't make 60 or 70 or 80 or 90. If I'm only making it to 50, I got to get on the horse now, right? Mm-hmm. And so I really bought into hustle culture on the idea of like Gary Vee, who has a multi-billion dollar business, like wanting to sell vintage toys at garage sales because he has to have a side hustle. Or David Goggins, like running a mile and yelling at you at a screen. Like I was super infatuated with that. I love that idea. And it was really exciting to me. And so I just revved my engine all the way, all the time for 10 years straight, basically just constantly overworking, constantly stressing, anxiety. And it produced a lot. I mean, I created 2 7-figure companies. I worked with the Miami Dolphins. I worked with the UFC. I bought the dream house with my wife. I took the trips I wanted to. It was great. But ultimately, the biggest problem of it was 11 years later, when I was 29 years old, I was told, hey, you need to have the surgery now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, how did I accelerate the clock by 20, 30 years? What happened? And essentially what it was is that the hustle culture of me putting and overworking the engine consistently made it worse inherently. Mm-hmm. What happens when you overwork a muscle? It gets bigger. Well, your heart can't get bigger, right? And so there's a point of no return with your heart size enlarging that they need to do a transplant, which is a significantly more dangerous surgery than my aortic valve replacement. And so I had to have the surgery when I was 29 years old and my wife was 5 months pregnant with our first child, which is terrible. I mean, it was just a terrible experience, but it allowed me to recognize the things that I've experienced that other people don't experience. A quick side note to this, Henry, that I think is valuable, and I won't dive in too much detail here, but when I was younger, 15 years old, my dad almost died from a completely random stroke, and he made it through and he's alive well today. Thank God. He gets to see my son and I get to spend time with him, and it's incredible. But the reality is a lot of people's stories, unfortunately, aren't like that. Their mom died from cancer when they were 11, or their dad died in a car crash, or their brother died from an overdose. These things happen. This is life. It does happen, unfortunately. And the reality is most people as human beings, like our brain's security measures are that will never happen to me. That won't be me, right? I would never have heart surgery. I'll never get into a car accident. My parents will be fine. And unfortunately, reality is like until you get struck by that, only then do you realize how you're spending your time and how you're being intentional about it. And so to me, the idea of anti-hustle is all about appropriate intention. The idea of hustle is consistently more, right? That's what hustle equals in this space. It's more, do more, get more, make more money, get more clients, get a bigger team, more, more, more. When you ascend any mountain, metaphorically, right, you achieve any milestone, there's another milestone to hit. So every person that wants to hit 10K originally, because that's a pretty common number, well, now they got to go to 50. And when you get to 50, now you got to go to 84. When you get to 84, now you got to get 150. When you get to 150, you got to get 300. Then you have to sell it for 10 million. it's always another thing. There's always more. There's never a finish line. There's always, you just got to do more and more and more. And they don't listen to the classic mantra of there's always a bigger fish in the sea. There's always a greater mountain to climb. And it's like running on a treadmill, right? You do a lot, you run a lot, you exert a lot of effort, but you get nowhere. And so there's so many people that are financially secure, that have provided for their family, that are living the life they want, and yet they feel unfulfilled, stressed out, anxious, and frustrated because more hustle says you're not doing enough consistently. You're always at arm's reach of success. And I'm just not comfortable with that as any sort of leader in this space, which I'm very grateful for that someone would listen to anything I have to say. But if it's one person or 1,000 people listening to me, it's extremely important to consider, like, you don't have to do what Gary Vee or David Goggins or Alex Shlinsky or Henry Kaminsky is telling you. What you have to do is what you want, defining your success. So anti-hustle to me is not working, not working hard, right? Anti-hustle to me is deliberate goals for a purpose and then specific actionable steps to achieving it versus hustle, which is this amoeba, right? Is this nebulous more. More is cancer. That's what it is. It is just cancer. If you have clarity of what exactly you want, because I want to get to $50,000 a month take home every single month so I can pay for my kids' private schools and have enough money to put away for our 401k and take these trips every other month to the cities I want to go in the world, and that's specific to me, that's a huge win. And then you can enjoy your life versus trying to compare yourself to someone else or the hustle mindset. That's what anti-hustle is to me. Smarter, not harder.
I love it. So let's take what we just talked about and get into prospecting smarter for accomplishing a very specific goal, which is finding the right clients for you. And so you have this company called Prospecting on Demand or Prospects on Demand. And I love the name, by the way. And I think it's very straightforward. However, it's where a lot of personal brands and business owners get caught up. Yeah. Their messaging is bringing in the wrong type of client or the wrong type of prospect. And now they're spending tons of time on these calls that don't go anywhere. And so talk to us about how you've helped some of your clients in the past with prospecting and the importance of doing it correctly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say we're world-class at prospecting. I really truly believe that. I think a couple of the main like core elements first and foremost is just understanding like our framework of mind of what prospecting is. I think most people don't like realize the difference between prospecting and sales. When you combine prospecting and sales, that's your client acquisition system. So prospecting is someone raising their hand that I'm interested. Sales is converting that interested party into working with you, right? Those are two very separate things. And I think some people, when they're like, I want a salesperson, what they really are looking for is an appointment setter or a prospector. And I think having clarity of what your semantics are is important. I'm not in any way suggesting my semantics are the only way. That's definitely not the case. It's just important that you're clear what your semantics are. Meaning, if a salesperson is a prospector and a salesperson, that's your semantics. To me, a salesperson takes the calls, prospector books the calls. Two very different things. So I just think that's an important framework at the front end to start. The next piece related to prospecting in general is just first understanding like how to scale appropriately. And this is a pretty tried and true method. Again, there's many ways to skin the cat. There's no necessarily wrong way. The most important thing is what you're satisfied with in order to get fulfillment from your life and satisfaction, which is my ultimate goal for everyone I work with. Building a business that facilitates your dream life is really what I'm all about. The idea behind prospecting or sales, the best way to scale is by doing the simplicity model, right? Essentialism, like one offer, one niche, one avatar. And the problem is there's so many people out there that are trying to work with anyone that will give them a dollar, forgetting about opportunity costs and efficiency. Efficiency in prospecting is so important. If you work with roofers and offer roofers an offer that is, you know, 30 guaranteed appointments in 90 days for $2,500 a month through Google advertising, right? Well, now you know exactly who you're looking for and you have the same offer every single time. If you're someone listening to this and you offer roofers, doctors, plumbers, gyms, et cetera, any offer that they want, we'll do your branding, we'll do your website, we'll do ads for you on Facebook, we'll do TikTok reels. and they wonder like why they struggle with prospecting or they struggle to retain their clients. It's because you're running what we call a Frankenstein agency. You're just getting a bunch of pieces all together, mushing it together and hoping that there's efficiency related to it. It's completely inefficient to do that. So that's just my opinion. Again, there's plenty of Frankenstein agencies that do absolutely fantastic. So I can't say that it's not a viable model. It's just not viable for efficiency's sake to do that. Efficiency's sake would say one offer, one niche, and retain them effectively. In terms of prospecting in general, like my best coaching on this, it's really important to understand like what the goals of prospecting are. There's many different outlets for prospecting, but the two main buckets need to be considered outbound and inbound. Inbound 99% of the time is going to be advertising, right? You running ads on Facebook, Google, Instagram, TikTok, et cetera, LinkedIn to generate interest from people that are clicking on your ad to speak with you. Those are always the highest quality of leads, and it's always the best method for prospecting. Other inbound would be considerate, like referrals, like, hey, Henry, here's my friend blank who you could work with. Here he is. That's still an inbound lead, but most people don't consider that. The reality to me is any outbound prospecting system that you create is a means to an end. The reality comes down to this. If you can create a math equation where if you put $1,000 into ads and you're going to get 5 calls from that, right? Which is, if I did my math there correctly, $200 per call, right? If you do that and then you end up selling 2 people from that, right? Now you have clarity on exactly what your cost per acquisition is, and you could see if you have an ROI on that. That's the only type of prospecting that has that very deliberate, clear number. The problem with other types of prospecting without that number is you can do like, how many cold calls did it take to get this many appointments to this amount of calls? You can do that type of math. The problem is the biggest variable is time, right? Time that either you're providing through a VA, like an appointment setter, time that you're doing yourself, and then time that you're paying for that person in general. The math equation on ads is always going to be the simplest method for scalability, right? And the reality is, if you're not willing to invest in advertising, but you're coaching or selling advertising, you really do end up coming off as a hypocrite, or at the very least, very scared of the product you're trying to sell. And you just can't be. You just can't be afraid of it. Now, for people that are listening that can't afford to invest in ads or don't want to yet, once again, like any outbound method is going to be a means to an end. The ultimate methods of prospecting that you usually see in the space look like this. Cold calling, LinkedIn outreach, Facebook outreach, DMs on websites, cold email, direct mail. I'm probably forgetting a few of them. Cold text messages, which is not really legal, but people still do it all the time. There's probably a few more, but like door knocking in person, which is pretty rare these days. Networking at events, pretty rare these days. But ultimately, like, there's plenty of at least 8 to 10 different outbound methods. The problem is trying to do all of them at once. The biggest and most important factor is that you really need to focus on the one that you think is the most important to you. And that's just meeting your prospects where they're at. So like if you're working with roofers, they're probably not on LinkedIn, right? If you're working with doctors, they're probably on LinkedIn. If you have emails already, set up some direct email campaigns with just very strong offers. The more deliberate you are with the offer, the better it is. Like doing this old format of like, hey, I just wanted to connect and meet, like there's too much competition out there right now for anyone to have like time to consider that. They just want something very deliberate. Like, hey, I can get you 10 more patients in the next 30 days. Guaranteed. I can prove it to you. If you're open to it, can I show you? You might get a lot of F off emails. You might get a lot of people not answering, but you will get a few people like, I'll be your Huckleberry. Let's chat about it, right? At the end of the day, though, the most important outbound prospecting method is the Dream 100 method. Now, 100 is an arbitrary number. It could be Dream 5, 10, 50, 1,000. I don't care. It's just an arbitrary number that everyone can just easily intake. The Dream 100 is against the one-to-many approach, right? Is the one-to-many approach. So you don't have to do one-to-one. Every other outbound method and inbound method is one-to-one. So if you run ads and you get 20 leads and 10 of those book a call, you have to do one-to-one sales calls with 10 people. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Very common method. And it's the same thing, obviously, with cold email. If you send 1,000 cold emails, 10 people answer, 5 of them book a call. You have to do one-on-one calls with 5 people. It is scalable. It works. It is proven to work. You can make a lot of money doing this. But it's infinitely better to also focus on the opportunities to create Dream 100 partnerships. I'll give you an example. I work with a woman, her name is Belle, incredible entrepreneur. She helps med spas with her marketing company. And basically she helps them generate more patients prepaid. So they take a deposit over the phone so they can't no-show them. And she has guaranteed results and she has incredible results for her clients. And what she does is she tries to get in front of the manufacturers of the products that she's selling. So the laser for the Botox, the laser for the Cool Sculpting service, and she'll reach out to those companies, right? And try to show them, hey, here's the results I've had for 10 of your clients. 10 of these Venus is like a laser that a lot of these men's bodies use. 10 of these Venus providers have worked with me and have made $100,000 in the last 90 days. I would love to become a provider for all of the Venus clients. And now you consider Venus has 10,000 plus med spas using their product. She just showed 1% of them or less that are using it and getting great results. Now she has to do a call with them, show them. Maybe she can get a webinar so she can share for free with 10,000 people how to use it. Maybe she'll become a preferred vendor, direct referral sources. The reason most people don't do this, Henry, is simply because of the amount of time it takes, right? To become a Venus preferred partner, it doesn't happen in one call close, right? That's my methodology. This is not a one call close thing. This is proof. This is time. This takes probably like 6 months, really, most of the time, where you got to email them multiple times to get in front of them, call them multiple times, show them consistent proof. Finally, you get on the call, show them what you do, and then you have to have a direct offer. The easiest direct offer and direct in the Dream 100 strategy, in my opinion, is a training webinar. It's really easy to do this where you say, I will provide value at no cost to your community that inflates your value to them by sending an email to all the Venus providers saying, hey, we're going to bring on an expert, Belle, who's helped 10 Venus providers make $100,000 in 90 days with her blank, blank, blank system. She's going to show it to you so you can implement it yourself. Then you go on there, you share the training with however many people show up, even if it's 100 people that you're not clients with. How many of those are going to be interested in working with you, Henry? Probably at least 10%. Now you got 10 of those people that are interested. Now you have the opportunity to sell one to many, where you can either make the offer on that call or you end up doing the one-to-one calls. But the value of finding your clients in buckets is so much more valuable. One other example of this, not the manufacturer side, is a referral system, right? So my agency is attorneys, right? Every single attorney has a prerequisite before they become attorney, which is law school. Who do you meet at law school? Right. Other attorneys, right? So if you are working with an attorney right now and you say, hey, where'd you go to law school? You went to University of Florida Law. How long ago? 10 years ago. Are you still connected with any of those attorneys that you went to law school with? Oh yeah, we're super close friends. We have a WhatsApp chat. There's 25 of you. Hey, would you be open to sending a message about what I've done for you? This is what I did in 2010 when I went from one client to 15 clients, literally in like a week and a half. Just by asking, hey, did anyone else you went to law school with? The Dream 100 strategy is the best prospecting outbound strategy. It just takes the longest usually due to the amount of people you're trying to get. So it's important that you still do the one-to-one approach with Instagram, Facebook, cold calling, direct mail, et cetera. But you have to be considerate of the Dream 100 in strategic partnerships. Like, who can you work on to get a one-to-many approach? It's extremely important and valuable.
Yeah. So just to clarify what that Dream 100 is, some of you may know what that is just by following Russell Brunson and being in the digital marketing space. It's a common term. But for those folks that aren't in that space, basically what the Dream 100 is finding 100 people that you can connect with. They may not even necessarily be your client, but they may have audiences of your clients.
Correct.
And you figure out how to establish a win-win relationship with them and then go on to serve that community and serve that relationship the best that you can.
Let me give you another example of this to kind of wrap this in a bow. I did an event in January with someone named Matt. He runs a high-level tool like Pro Tools company, and his offer is complementary to what mine is, and we are not competitors in any way. So he asked me to come speak at the event. Now, what he's giving me is the strategic partnership opportunity of, hey, there's going to be 50 people in a room, almost all of which can work with you in POD. In order to get those people, normally 50, right, I have to spend thousands of dollars on ads, right, or do literally 50 one-on-one calls, which, as you know, Henry, if I do 50 one-on-one calls, let's just say for the sake of this, half of them probably won't be a good fit. Half of them could be a good fit. And then I have to close, right? Which, look, I'm a great salesperson, but I'm not going to close every person, right? When you're in person, when you're speaking on an expertise that you have, training the one call close, which is what I do most of the time, everyone in the audience is like, dang, I got to work with this guy. Seven people joined my program. It's a $15,000 program. Seven people from that one event. That is strategic partnership. That is Dream 100. That is something that is very hard to replicate in any other outbound methodology. And it's extremely valuable. And just to make it a win-win, right? Of course, I would pay Matt referral commissions as a thank you, or sponsor a future event where I'm putting my money in to now I don't have to give him referral commissions and I get to do this. You can't be afraid of this type of strategic partnership. I'll just finish with this point. A lot of people are worried that they don't think they're experts enough to share, like to be in a strategic partnership. Like if they have the opportunity, right? You work as a roofing agency. If you have an opportunity to work with a company that has 25 roofers, right? Because they sell the same tile or something, whatever it is. They're like, oh, I can't do a webinar because I'm not skilled enough. It's like the amount of knowledge that you have, just 1% of that knowledge is life-changing to the roofers because they don't know anything at all.
They know how to roof.
They don't know anything.
I know.
If you give them anything, literally, like, here is how you get more reviews. They're like, wow, this is incredible. Like, and I think human, like especially entrepreneurs and agency owners, they constantly are demeaning their value of like, oh, I'm not a coach and I just do this. It's like, dude, you have so much expertise. Like, don't be afraid. And the last thing I'll say on it is, and I think I said the last thing I'll say three times, so my bad. But point being, if you have the opportunity to do it, I would rather you do it and fall completely flat on your face, look like a complete idiot, and have the 1,000 people that watched you think you're a stupid person and not try, right? Trying is the first prerequisite to any level of success at all. And trying your best is the most important thing. Like, that's what it all comes down to. If you fall flat on your face, you're going to get right back up, optimize it, and learn how to do it better the next time. But if you don't try, you inherently and automatically fail because you didn't even give yourself the chance. And the stakes are really low. You're not like a surgeon working on my heart. It's like, well, I tried and I killed him. Oopsies. My bad. You're not an airline pilot. Yikes. I, you know, veered the wrong way and killed half the people on the plane. This is not, what's the worst thing that happens? Your ego gets bruised for like 30 minutes. Big. And whoop, you'll be fine. So I think that's a really important thing because, Henry, I see a lot of people that are afraid to do it.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I was one of them, believe me. You know, Russell, when I was in his Inner Circle program, he's like, why are you not doing webinars yet? Like, and I'm just like, oh, Dan. And I went like 6 months without doing one. And then I did my first one and it was awful. I mean, God, awful. And I was like, I'm never doing that again. That was such a waste of time. Da, da, da. Again, 30 minutes of huffing and puffing. And I'm like, okay, all right. What did I screw up on? How could I make it better? Let's get back out there and do it again. And that was like 5 years ago, you know, and which has led me into doing so much more live streaming. And I would consider every single one of my live streams a little mini webinar of some sort because there's a live audience and there's a huge opportunity to mess up in front of a live audience. And it doesn't even faze me anymore because once you get those reps in and you're just constantly getting better, it is what it is. And I think people really appreciate that. I'll give you a quick example. Jason Pfeiffer, he's the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. He puts out an IG reel yesterday. I just embarrassed the crap out of myself in front of a billionaire. Did you see that?
No. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then he explained to himself, like, so he's interviewing this billionaire for an upcoming magazine cover and spread. And he notices his camera, and this guy is in the tech space. Like, he's a tech billionaire. He realizes that his computer is running low on battery. So he like stops the interview. He's like, I'm sorry, we have to stop. My computer's going to die. So he scrambles to get the freaking cord. He plugs it in and he's like, why isn't this computer charging? And he's like freaking out in front of this guy. He forgot to plug the cord into the camera, into the computer.
Classic.
And then they all got chuckles out of it. But the point of his story was that humanized him. That whole experience made him feel, well, that there was a human connection. Because do you not think that billionaire screwed up in his lifetime to some extent of what happened to Jason? Of course it did. So, and I love how you came right out of the gate today on the show saying, listen, I'm going to tell you some things But I'm trying not to paint this picture here today that I'm like, I've did it all and I got it all right the first time.
No, no, definitely not. And I think it's a perfect callback to that. And I think it's part of the reason why people are afraid to fail, because they want to like tweak every little bell and whistle to be perfect, when the reality is like, you're never going to be perfect no matter what. Like, I truly believe I'm an exceptional speaker. It's probably the thing I'm most gifted at. It's the thing I enjoy the most. But the idea that I can't get better, that I can't improve, that I wouldn't have the ability to get constructive criticism, that I can't impact people more, is just crazy. You know, it's just crazy. Like, I had the opportunity, like I said, to speak at Harvard this past week. And about a month and a half ago, I spoke at Columbia University as well. And for the Columbia speech, Henry, it was the first time in, I don't know, like 5 years that I was nervous before a speech. People ask me all the time, like, do you get nervous before speaking? And the majority of the speaking I do is on the one call close, which like I could do blindfolded, my eyes closed. Like, I've done it 1,000 times. So I'm really confident. But this one was a completely different experience. I was talking about my surgery. It was a pre-planned speech, which is not super something I'm used to. And it was honestly exciting, Henry. Like, I felt alive. Like, feeling nervous was like, dang, this is so cool. This means like, I have a physiological response to what's about to happen. And of course it was great and it was an amazing experience. But I think like leaning into nerves, leaning into fear is great. What I find in one of the most important lessons of my life is the more uncomfortable you are, the more comfortable you become. And how nervous I was for my surgery, which, you know, we could have real talk on the podcast, obviously very, very scared, very concerned I wasn't going to be my son, very concerned I was going to die. The doctors weren't, but I was. But the only thing I did was just say the mantra over and over on the way to the hospital. I kept saying it. The more uncomfortable you are, the more comfortable you become, because that means I'm on the other side of greatness, right? I found every time that you step out of comfort zone, that you find yourself in a place of, I'm a little bit nervous by doing this. Life's greatest treasures are on the other side of that, whether it's waking up from heart surgery, which I got to tell you is, it's quite something. It really is. It's like a totally life-changing experience waking up. It's just a crazy thing. It's like amazing. You're like, wow, it's over. I'm on the other side. I did it. I'm here. I made it. And then just in general, like any sort of thing, your first speech, your first Dream 100 conversation, your first sale, like whatever it might be, when you were really uncomfortable, even if you failed at it, at the end of it, you're like, I'm so proud of myself. I'm so proud that I did this. I'm pissed that this happened, but I'm proud of myself. I'm going to optimize and go from there. And I believe in that mantra so much. The more uncomfortable you are, the more comfortable you become.
Oh, I love that, dude. I love that. It's like the story of my life. I told the story the other day online about how when I was in Russell Brunson's Inner Circle program for the first year, I felt like I did not belong there. People were making what I made in a year and a week. And, you know, yeah. I was like, what did I just get myself into? Absolutely. And, you know, it was a great experience. It was a great experience that I'll never forget. And it really accelerated my growth as a business owner. And it was probably one of the best $25,000 experiences or investments I ever made. Now I know it's not 25K anymore. It's a lot more expensive than that, but I got in at the right time. What do you say? And it really helped accelerate my growth and my experience. And right, tying this all back into prospecting is, I know a lot of people fear it. A lot of people are uneasy with it, but if you follow what some of the practical and tactical things that Alex said to you today, it's going to relieve some of that. You're going to get way clearer focus and you're going to have way more informed conversations with the right people. And so this was such a great conversation, really. And it needed to be had, because there's so many people that are listening or watching right now going, where do I start with this? So I want to round up the show by you sharing with everybody, where do they go next? How could they learn more from you? And how can they get better at prospecting and selling?
Yeah, I love that. I think the easiest way to find me is prospectingondemand.com. It has all of my social links and everything like that. I'm pretty active on like every platform. For transparency's sake, everything I post on Facebook is me. Everything on every other platform is my team taking my stuff that I post from Facebook. No real rhyme or reason behind that. It's just what I'm used to, I guess. That's just the truth. Sure. So like LinkedIn and TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff is just regurgitated from what I share on Facebook. We have a Facebook group called the Seven Figure Sales Savages. It's a really great group. We do training every single week in it. I'm a very transparent person. I'm a very big believer, Henry, in the idea of giving everything away. I don't withhold any information on what I can help someone with. I give it away with the intention and understanding that people buy implementation and accountability. They don't buy information. You can find any amount of information you want for free on the internet at any moment. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I have some sort of magical information that you can't find anywhere else. What I have is the implementation skills to help you do that. And that's what we do in our mentorship community. That's why we're a white glove service. That's why we only take a certain amount of people in. But that's our product. So prospectingondemand.com is the best way to find me. And we're always running events where we got four a year right now. And we'd love to have you be a part of it.
Awesome. Alex, what a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for being part of the show. And keep rocking, man. Love what you're doing. Thanks for having
me. Appreciate you.
You got it. There you have it, my friends. Another episode in the books. Be sure to do everything that everybody else that podcast tells you to do at the end of these shows, like leave a review and share it and hit me up on Instagram and give me one of your biggest takeaways of the show and do all of that stuff. Because you know what? It's the fuel that creates this podcast and it keeps me going. I love hearing wins from you guys. I'm getting them. I get them every day at some capacity, and it's the fuel that really lights me up at the end of the day. So I appreciate all you guys. Hope you had some great, great feedback here. Great takeaways here. And I'll catch you on the next episode. Take care.